All right, it's the BJ Murphy Show. We're here with global financial strategist, Mr. David Anderson. And this brother is a multi-billionaire. You know what I'm saying?
Well, hold on. Not yet. A billionaire yet. I've made some millions, but I'm not at the B yet.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hey, well, you made some millions. That's close enough for me, man. I'm telling you. Man, it's just a pleasure to talk to you, brother. You're like the best kept secret in the financial world. And of course, a lot of people know you. We're going to get to know you better. And I've seen you around. Of course, you've done some major things in the financial industry. And the thing I like about this interview is that you said you want to put the everyday black man in America in a position to be a global millionaire. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about your virtual event. Welcome to the show. I'm just excited to talk to you today, David.
Well, I'm so excited too. And thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Now let's talk about real quick before we get into your career. What inspired you to have this virtual event talking about financial wealth?
1 million black men came from, I'll be very honest with you. Yes. It came from a couple of different areas.
Yes.
One was that I felt, first off, that there was not a platform or anything that existed where black men from the diaspora, mm-hmm. right? I think the Judaism, Jewish community does this very well, in which they, you know, globally,
yeah.
right? Connect, right? And they all have Israel to do that. I think the Chinese diaspora, which we'll talk about hopefully later, my time in China, they also connect globally in the diaspora. For us, because the way that Africa was chopped up into so many countries, because of colonization, and obviously the slave trade across the Caribbean, Americas, and such, we have, as men, as melanin men, men of African descent,
yes.
have not really been able to come, not only come together, but also be able to explain the world that we're currently in, right, in a global context.
Right.
And I think that is really what the inspiration came from. The second thing was that I really wanted to get in the online space and online marketing. I've actually helped one or two people actually become wealthy in the online marketing space. And what I realized was that there was a lot of people selling things to our people, but not understanding the struggle of our people. When I say the struggle, like the translation of it.
Yes.
Okay. And so you can teach certain principles and things about economics, wealth, finances, but then you have to understand the context and the lens in which not only where someone is coming from, but also what they're going to endure as they get into the system
right.
we call capitalism. And so I was like, well, if I don't do it, then who will? And I got to tell you, my goal is not to be the center of attention of this thing long term. My goal is to set it up so that brothers can thrive around the world.
Why do we feel that capitalism is such a bad word?
I think it's a lot of things, man. Look, I'll tell you, you know, having traveled 18 countries on the continent of Africa and being around, I also think that our Africanness comes into effect.
Yeah.
When I say that, like, you know, a perfect example, right, that you can't get away from. If you take the American system, right, of capitalism, there's a big assisted living, kind of assisted living system, right? As well as a system of where you take the elderly,
mm-hmm.
right? And pretty much when you get to the place where you're not necessarily as productive, you know, they put you away in nursing homes or sometimes assisted living facilities, right?
Yeah.
Well, although that may be part of the capitalist structure and it's nothing wrong with it, African, particularly Asians, and also those of Latin descent, we don't really do that. Like, we're not putting grandma and granddad in a nursing home. So although that is an option, we don't do it. And part of it comes from our heritage. Part of it comes from our Africanness. Part of it comes from that.
Yeah.
And so I say that to say that there is a missing translation for us,
mm-hmm.
right? As black men get into this capitalist society, they run into things just like that. For instance, you're telling me to put my grandmother away in a nursing home, and I'm going, uh-uh, grandma,
right.
that ain't happening.
That's right.
Right? And so the same way that happens to us, there are other nuances that happen to us when we go into this capitalistic system that we have to reconcile so that we can thrive and not just survive.
Your career path is very interesting being from the south side of Chicago, my favorite city in the world. And
it is,
then,
it's amazing.
Man, it's a beautiful city, man. People, you know, all the crazy stuff that people hear about it, just throw that in the garbage can. That's not true. And then going to Wall Street, okay? Yeah. Then going to the Obama administration and the White House. Tell us about that trajectory.
Yeah, so first off, I want to say, you know, I thank God for everything I have.
Yes.
I think it's been a crazy journey for me. So I got to go back for you to understand the story. So the story is, so mom and dad, they're from Mississippi, Louisiana.
Wow.
My dad was an amazing, I think a great man. My mom was an amazing woman. They both got married. They were in the church. They actually married as virgins.
Okay.
Wow, beautiful. My mother has me, has some complications, but then has my brother, and then it triggers postpartum depression, which triggers schizophrenia. Mm. Now you understand, this is the late 80s, early 90s when she had my brother. So the mental health consciousness is not what it is today.
Right.
And so, you know, my mom, my dad, they were dealing with this, you know, illness, what I call a sickness that enters a family. And if you've had anyone with mental health stuff in your family at all, you understand how complicated that can be.
Yes.
So here I am. That goes on. Obviously, the marriage breaks down. They get divorced. And then, you know, I'm moving around quite a bit because of the circumstance situation. My dad almost lost his mind. Mm. I'm really in a situation where I get used to ambiguity. I have to move around a lot, try to get myself together. And so everything came to light for me at about 19 years old. I was always pretty bright.
Yeah.
I had about 18 friends who died of gun violence when I grew up. About 18 friends who died.
How did that make you feel? What did that trigger something in you?
Anywhere you go in the world, London, New York, Chicago, all these big cities, you have rough areas, right? And that's just part of what it is. Anywhere in the world, right? I mean, I think we all adapt, right? I think we adapt to trauma. Mm-hmm. I think we adapt to environments. When you're growing up in it, you don't know any better. So you just think, hey, this is normal. You know, while some people, when that happens, they feel like life is short and they have nothing to lose. And I did feel like life was short, but I didn't feel like I had nothing to lose. Matter of fact, I felt like I had everything to gain.
Wow.
And so in some regards, man, when there's no expectation for you, you create your own expectation.
There you go.
So, I had nobody was like, hey, you know, I didn't have the pressure of I had to be this, I had to be that. They just said, don't get killed, don't have any babies, right? And I mean, that was the standard. For me, at 19, I was stuck with a decision. My mom had schizophrenia, but also had leukemia at the time.
Wow.
I had these younger siblings. I had gone to college. I was pretty bright. And I chose, man, to turn back and go back home because I wanted to see my brother and sister thrive.
Yeah,
I wanted to see them thrive. So I wanted to take care of them. And that taught me so much, working 2-3 jobs. But I was reading books, man. I mean, I was reading 10-15 books a month by myself.
Go ahead.
On the bus and train. So over those 4 years, I read about 600 books. And what I started to see was trend lines. Mm. I read biographies, politics, economics, religion, everything I could get my hand on, I was reading.
Yeah.
And I started to understand how the world worked, how things were shaped. And I also saw that, for instance, Goldman Sachs, it was like you read these biographies, these backgrounds, and you see these trends. You see people, they end up at these Ivy League schools. They end up at these big corporations, financial institutions. So I said, oh, okay, I get this now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the association, right? The association with the institution lends you credibility.
Yeah.
So then these doors can open, right? Or this can open. And so after that, man, I decided to go to Wall Street. That's when I went to Wall Street. When I got to Goldman, well, a funny story about that. Before I got to Goldman, I was taking care of looking after my brother, sister, my mom.
Yeah.
I made all but $20,000 for the year.
Wow.
Right. When I got to Wall Street and Goldman, they gave us a $20,000 sign-on bonus.
Man, that's crazy.
And so what it taught me was that it's not necessarily the work that you're putting in. It's also the system in which you're working in.
Come on.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So a lot of brothers, for instance, right, you're putting in the work or doing the thing, but you have to analyze the system that you're working in. Some areas in the economy, they pay more for the same output, right?
Yeah.
Right. Or same input output. They pay more than other sections of the economy.
Yeah.
And one thing we have to do is that we have to really look at that and say, okay, where is my best efforts made? So I went there, did that. And then I just noticed, man, a lot of people there worked at the White House, on the Bush, on the Clinton, on all this stuff. I said, how so many of y'all worked at Treasury, the White House? What is this?
And they're not smarter and than so, you. You realize that?
No. And so I said, man, well, we got a black man in office, right? So I went after it after being rejected 6 times from the White House. They finally let me in. And from there, man, I learned it was an honor. I mean, look, I'll be straight with you, to work alongside President Barack Obama and that administration was an honor as a black man, obviously, but also, you know, he's a really good dude. He's a good dude. You can debate the policy, you can debate all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I tell people what he did for us.
Yes.
The image of him, what he did for us around the world.
Yes.
Is why this is the time for us to really start to take advantage of that.
Yeah, he's a beautiful man, a beautiful spirit. And, you know, you'll go down in history being a part of that team. So that was a big win for us, you know, and I wanted to go back to what you were talking about. You were reading on the bus, because we've got to teach our young people how reading, writing, and all those things change your perspective on life. It had to change how you thought by reading all those books.
Oh, look, that education that I still live off of, that education I still live off of and glean from. Like my former education was nice.
Yeah.
Right. It was great. You know, did the Chicago State thing, did the Harvard program, whatever.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah.
But be honest with you, it was my self-education.
Right.
That really, really informed me. And you have to understand, especially for, you know, fathers and mothers listening, right? You have to provide an education to your children or encourage them in their journey of education. Because if you're depending on schools and institutions, first off, let's just be straight that we're not made for us.
Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
All right. They were not made for us. I want to get into that later.
That's right.
Understanding systems and how they're created. Then you're sadly mistaken. Like, you cannot expect a system or institution like, you know, Hershey cannot expect Mars candy.
Right.
Right. They both make chocolate. Mm-hmm. But Hershey cannot expect Mars to create the taste of Hershey.
Yes. Man.
Right?
Right.
Like, when we think about that, I want to go more into that, but, you know,
All right, man, go into it, man. You're doing some good stuff here.
Yeah.
You know, and using your imagination, too. We want to talk about that. I want to talk about your creative imagination, because you had to see yourself in your imagination where you are today, and you lived up to it. Because you did, on the TED Talk, I got a chance to see that, man, that you did a pledge of allegiance to yourself for success.
That's correct.
So we'll get into that as well. What was it like living and working in those financial markets? Like, when you were in Asia, you were in Europe, you were in Uganda, all how the different currencies work, that we just don't have a clue about how that works. Talk about that experience.
So here was the first, the lesson for me. Cash is king, and whoever holds the money wins. You can go to war. People can go to war and you can beat up somebody, right? You could destroy a country. But if there's no spoils, if there's no oil, no gold, if there's no spoils, you fought a worthless fight.
Mm.
And so when you look around the world and the dynamic of currency, obviously fiat currency and everything else, it really is a battle. And I learned this in D.C. is that really we're always... all the major countries, they're always at war with each other, whether they say it or not, whether they do it or not. Russia, China, you know, Iran, Great Britain, America, like, there's a constant war going on, because it's a war of the financial markets. It's a war of resources. It's a war of corporations. There's a battle going on. Right.
Yeah.
And so what you start to learn is, one, you start to see the characteristics of countries and how they operate and even how they deal with their poor. Right. How they deal with their policy. You start to understand how they view money, their cultural lens. You start to see things. You start to see these trends, and you see similarities. You see major differences.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, being around the world, what it teaches you is, one, we're all one human race, but there are nuanced cultural differences, which is why, you know, you talk about peace in the Middle East. I mean, man, you're talking about so many nuances to that, because. Yeah. You know, we're upset about the slavery that we endured. I mean, you got nations over there. you were a slave to me for 100 years, mm-hmm. and then I was a slave to you for 100 years, yeah, and this person that, I mean, it's really convoluted over there.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
So it teaches you how the world works, how things operate, and that informs your decision making, mm-hmm. because now, especially I'm speaking to Black men, as a Black man, now you understand what role you play, what role you have played in the world, right? In economics,
because everybody is living off the wealth of the Black man and woman. We started all this, and now we don't participate in any form or fashion.
And that is, man, I'm happy you said that, because here's the big thing. That is the part of this that I am so excited about, because if you look at France, right? France got rich off of Haiti.
Yeah.
Okay. You look at a lot of Britain got rich off of Jamaica, right? And the slavery. America, obviously, we were here in America if you're Black American and such. And so you look at the idea that, you know, obviously slave labor provided capital income, mm-hmm. because they didn't have to pay people. And they were able to rebuild and industrialize because of that. So how dare we sit on the sideline with a system that we built that we say, okay, I'm not going to participate in. Mm. Now, that's your choice. You're a grown man, a grown woman.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, and again, I want to speak to Black men globally, but let me also speak to Black men in America,
yeah.
right? The world understands our struggle, yeah. right? Because it has been televised.
Yes.
Okay. And understand that you, in many cases, are more loved outside of this, outside of your current nation, than you even are in your nation.
Wow.
And once you grab that and you understand that, in many respects, it can set you free psychologically.
Mm, yeah, come on.
From this petri dish, mm-hmm. right? That you feel locked up in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I always encourage every Black man I know, to go to the motherland. I always tell them to go to Africa, not so much for necessarily you have to go to Africa, but because if you've never been to Africa, you don't know what it means to operate in a social context that's built around you.
Mm.
I want to dive into that a little bit.
Come on, dive into it. Let's go.
When I was in China, I had a huge revelation.
Yeah.
Okay? When you go to China, man, you start to understand that how a system or a nation is built around its people,
mm-hmm.
right? The toilets are built for the Chinese.
Mm.
The hallways, the doorways, everything is built with them in mind.
Yeah.
Right? The clothing, their height, their size, the technology, it's all built with them in mind.
Okay.
Because it's their country, it's their nation.
Right.
I, as an American, okay, could go to China and I could participate
mm-hmm.
in their economy.
Yeah.
But I understood very clearly it wasn't built for me. It was built for the Chinese.
Right, right.
Okay.
Right.
And I couldn't be mad about that.
And they're not ashamed of that either. They're not ashamed
of that.
They're
not ashamed of it. Right. Yeah, that's what it is, right? The challenge with we have in America as Black men, right, or the West, I wouldn't say the Western world, mm-hmm. the Western world, we in many respects are a part of systems.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep.
That we hear the phrase that it's, hey, you're American, you're, you know, Canadian, you're, you know, whatever, you know, Great Britain. We hear a phrase that, hey, this is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But understand you can participate.
Right.
But it wasn't built with you in mind.
That's right. Come on. That's okay? That's it.
And so if it wasn't built for you in mind, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like someone who has a girlfriend or a wife or whatever the case. If you buy her a gift, you're buying the gift. The ring has her size, okay?
Right.
The necklace, right, has her favorite diamonds or her favorite jewels. And so if you give it to another woman, she may appreciate it and like it, but it wasn't created for her. Make sense?
Right.
Right? And so once I started to understand that, I could see myself differently participating in the system,
mm-hmm.
right? We always sometimes wonder why, you know, immigrants or foreigners, they come in and they come in our communities, right? And they make a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
Because they're coming in mind knowing that the system of America is a capitalistic system.
Mm-hmm.
It's full of capital. Let me come get the capital, right?
Yeah.
But let me not be fooled. If I come from Syria, if I come from Lebanon, if I come from whatever, it's not built for the Lebanese.
Right.
It's not built for the Syrian. And that's okay. Like, when we understand that and we accept that, we can now say, okay, let me go get mine and take care of mine, my family. Let me set this up so that I can participate but not be offended. right?
Yeah.
By when I run into those roadblocks about, you know, definition of what it is.
So that's what you're saying. So when I thought about what you just said, there's a war going on too against the black community, and they want to keep us impoverished, right? All over the world globally. So we need a general to lead us out into the financial world. And I know one of the things, one of your goals is to create generational wealth seven layers deep.
That's right.
How are we going to do that?
Okay, here it is, right?
Come on.
I realize, Vijay, that when you know where we've been, then you know where you can go. Mm-hmm. Okay? Just like every cycle in history, right? We went through a cycle. So we're not the first former slaves in world history to get social freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then to start to grow in our own economics.
Yeah.
We're not the first slaves in history to do this, okay? And so what I believe is that those before us, whether it was Booker T, W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, all of those, they were all part, Malcolm X, they were part of the social fabric to help what I think pave the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the social movement always precedes the economic movement.
Right.
It always does. Yeah. Look at history, right? Social movement precedes economic movement. Mm-hmm. China, right? And Mao had to exist in what they did in order for China to be created into what it is today.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
Because the social movement helps the minds,
mm-hmm.
but then the economic, it's kind of like in Paul in scripture, Paul talks about, hey, one planted, one watered, but someone else, you know, brought the increase, right? There are steps to this thing.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And so I think my mission and goal now is to say, okay, this is how you do it. How do we do it? First off, let me say this, Vijay. Even in your life, anybody in your peripheral, okay,
mm-hmm.
who's 8 years old and up and does not have a bank account,
wow.
We got an issue, including myself, all of us.
A lot of people I know don't have bank accounts.
Well, hold on. Yeah. Now think about this for a second, right? It's not the fact of having the bank account itself. It's that the child is learning, right? When you have a bank account, you have to what? You have to put cash in it. You have to withdraw.
Yeah.
You have to start to measure how much money you really have.
Yeah.
If I overdraft, if I take too much, oh, that's not a good feeling. I get extra fees.
Mm-hmm.
If I do XXX, I do, right? And so here it is, right? This economic system is what it is. But it's time for us to give it something I want to call Black characteristics.
Mm. Come on, talk on
African
that.
Characteristics.
Okay.
I didn't make this up. I learned this actually when I was over in China. When I read Jin Jinping's The Manifesto, they talked about taking socialism, taking communism, taking capitalism, and giving it Chinese characteristics, right? What does that mean? Is that you take the information, right, and what you get about the system, again, the current system that's created worldwide, don't get it twisted, right, is a European system. It's not bad, not evil.
Mm-hmm.
There's always been trade and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the financial system, the World Bank, how this is all created from a European mindset, right?
Right.
But if we start to give it what I call Black characteristics, African characteristics, right, it means that when you look at your business and your life, okay, especially when you start to do things independently,
right,
you can be comfortable with understanding, okay, they talk about, you know, marketing, and they talk about these things, right? Well, maybe at my store, I'm saying, like, if I'm going, let's say I own a technology repair store, right? Maybe at my store, because when we do things, we like music, right? We like, you know, these different nuances. We like, as a people, we, you know, whatever the food is, like, we think about things from our perspective,
right,
and how we see the world,
okay,
versus taking it completely on, right,
mm-hmm.
and trying to fit a square in a circle hole.
Okay, I'm following you.
Right, and so I'll give you an example of this. Right, people talk about being financially free, BJ. Financially, yeah. I want to be financially free.
Right.
One of the tenets of the movement is going is I want people to be financially free, but also economically free. Mm-hmm. What is the difference? To be financially free is to be able to buy what you want.
Okay.
You're able to buy a house, able to buy shoes, you're able to buy education. You're able to buy what you want. When you are economically free, it means that you own the things that people buy.
Wow.
So what we've been focused on is this idea of growing our financial freedom, which has made us effectively spenders.
Yeah, okay? The consumer nation.
Nothing wrong with having a bag. Go get the bag.
Right, right.
Right? But the goal now is to own the things that people buy.
Wow.
Because now you have power and influence, right, in order to control your income and also help control your wealth.
Exactly.
Right? As long as you're making money and you're spending the money, you could talk about assets, but what I'm trying to get in the mindset is that economically free and financially free are very different. Because when you're economically free, you sit back on the ownership of that which you have, and you're able now, right? You're not worried about all the economic stuff and economy stuff because you own what people buy.
I love that.
And so that's a big thing. I'm trying to help people understand and also help our brothers see that difference.
How patient are you in teaching this and developing this mindset in the Black community?
I'm very patient. That's why I think my time is now. I think that we're going to go hard. And here it is. Somebody else told me, they said, well, David, you know, why don't you get sponsors and things like that? I said, you know what? No. I said, and I'll tell you why. Because what I have witnessed over my time period is that anything, I always talk about us, when we have things that are what I would deem as become a movement, become powerful. Mm-hmm. When we get sponsors, BJ, now we're beholden to the sponsor's desire.
Exactly. They water down the message.
They water down the message, right?
I'm saying nobody wants us to be economically empowered because we are the consumers of this world, really. That's going to present a serious problem. But we need this conversation, man. I'm so glad that you're so transparent and open with this because you do own 16 businesses, right?
I do.
Tell us about what you own. And, you know, we want to know what you've been able to amass with your mindset, if you don't mind talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about it briefly. I mean, I'm heavy in the logistics world. So I own Amazon company. We deliver anywhere between 10 and 15,000 packages a day.
Okay.
Ownership in the FedEx space as well. Also medical transportation, as well as a dumpster roll-off. The dumpsters that mm-hmm. sit in your front, mm-hmm. a dumpster roll-off company.
Okay.
I also own, which is a great plug, we took the med spa industry. We have the Black Skin Institute,
okay,
which is basically we work with melanin skin only for the most part. So a lot of these procedures out there, they create scarring. They work for other people, but for us, they scar our skin because of, you know, the melanin mm-hmm. that, you know, you got scars on your knees that you have when you were six. So we've mastered how to minimize scars, remove moles off your face without scarring, all of those type of things. And then I'm also in some international spaces. I'm in water, clean water around the world, Syria, Ukraine. I'm in the telehealth space, but I'm also in the telehealth space for Black folks. So a company called Black Telehealth.
Okay.
We just closed a pretty significant large, about an $80 million deal with CVS Aetna. I am trying to do everything. There's a women's conference that I helped start and own called Faith Figures as well. I mean, so I'm very diversified across the portfolio that I have. Oh, also, I own a Chinese media company.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I forgot about that too.
That's cool.
So, look, I'm very diversified. And what I can say is that this, like, you don't have to own, look, my brain allows me to, is what I do. You don't have to own 16 companies. But I do think that, if I could say anything, is that it is better for us to learn and teach ownership mm-hmm. at this stage in our evolution.
Thank you.
BJ, thank you. Thank at you. This stage, thank right? You, I get it. People coming out the gate, like we basically went through what I would call the 1970s, 80s, and even 90s, right? it was a 30-year run of what I call, you know, if I speak to Black Americans, right, and even those in other countries who were set free, right? When we were set free in the 50s and 60s and the movements, independence, even the African countries' independence, I feel like we went through a time period of trying to prove to white folks, I'm just going to be straight with
just
you.
Just right, come on.
Right? And there's some, look, white folks watching this, there's some really great white folks.
Right, but it's a true statement.
However, we've spent time trying to prove to white folks that we could do just as much or be as good or mm-hmm. do whatever it was
right.
because of this couple hundred years of mentality that we were inferior.
Yes, right.
So some of them thought we were inferior, and then we thought ourselves to be inferior.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And so we had to kind of prove to ourselves that all of a sudden we were not inferior and that we, right, could hang. We proved that, okay? We had a whole president, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Right.
Now it is time for us to focus on, in this next dispensation, this next evolution, mm-hmm. it's focused on collective and active economic growth.
There you go.
Right? If you looked at us as a country, check this out, right? Mm-hmm. We almost have about the same GDP. At least, I mean, so Black Americans have the same GDP as Canada, right? And we don't see ourselves as a nation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Globally, we are diaspora.
Yeah.
But we don't see ourselves. If we start seeing ourselves as a nation, even the Blacks over in London and Great Britain,
yeah.
right? Their GDP is in the trillion, and so like we got to see ourselves as a nation, because when you see yourself as a nation.
Yeah, we're a nation within a nation.
That's right. That's right. We're a nation, right? Some of the things that, you know, again, I've studied religion. Some of the things, I know the Nation of Islam went through different nuances, but yeah. one thing that they were trying to do was that they were trying to get people to see themselves, right, nationalistically,
yes.
right?
Yes,
you take the homogeneous nature of who we are and what we are, and you get a focus. Right. Mm-hmm. You get a focus on, hey, let's make sure we have more exports than we do imports.
Mm-hmm.
As a nation, what mm-hmm. makes a nation powerful is that they can export more
yeah.
than what they have to import.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. It gives you surplus.
That's right.
Because right. you're sending more out.
Yes.
The only major export we have right now, one of our biggest exports is music, because we made it our own. Jazz, R&B.
Right.
Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hip hop.
That's right.
We've made this and other people purchased it.
Right.
They bought it.
And they control it. And they control it.
Right. Well, now they control it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. We actually gave that away
yeah.
from a control perspective.
Yeah.
But there are many other industries, I believe, that we can be an export. I think we have skills and abilities in our community that we can export.
What do you think we can export right now? What's one of the things you think?
Two things. I think one is transportation,
mm-hmm.
and I think one is and one logistics, and one is security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are areas that I think that, you know, I'm just speaking hypothetically here. Everything has what I call a natural stereotype to it, a natural bias to it, right?
Okay.
You know, when it comes to although right now a lot of things are security technology, there are still the area of security. It's not odd for them. Overall, a lot of us were more muscular men in many areas, but it's not odd to watch a Black man walk in and talk about security, mm-hmm. right? And talk about the needs of that. There's numerous spaces, I think, in the labor space where we can really thrive in the area of HVAC. Again, these are not necessarily the sexiest spaces, but it's always paid. It's always here. It's always solid. And so one thing I'm trying to get people to see is, don't look at all the fancy stuff.
Yeah.
Look at what I call the hush money.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the stuff that's quiet. When I worked at JP Morgan, BJ, the one thing I saw was that a lot of people who make wealth, they're doing a lot of things that are quiet.
Yeah.
It's quiet money.
Right.
Right. You know, they're making pockets on pool tables.
Right. Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So my thing is, I want to see us go and attack more industries that are quiet in nature.
Uh-huh.
The stuff that a lot of people don't want to do.
Yeah.
Right. And that's okay. Getting into concrete, you know, getting into areas where it's a little bit more agnostic, objective, who I hire. See, when we get into these spaces and it's all about subjectivity, it's a big fight, man. Like who I hire as my wealth manager, who I hire as my marketer, who I hire as whatever, it's very subjective.
Right, right.
Now, who I hire to deliver a dumpster to my door, mm-hmm. I don't care as long as that dumpster gets to my door.
That's right, that's right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so I want to help us think more about industries that have less subjectivity, which will lend itself to less bias, less racism, less thing, because in those spaces, we can thrive.
Yes.
Because we're not fighting mm-hmm. the subjectivity all the time. Look, you're not going to, we're not going to change overnight. Yes, there are brothers and sisters. I'm happy Robert Smith, who I know, he was, you know, did fireside chats with us at Goldman.
Yeah.
But Robert Smith, man, when he built his firm, dude, he had his Jewish brother that was with him. People didn't even know Robert owned the company for years.
Wow.
Now, look, that's a strategy.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But I know, look, you know, everyone can't do that. But everyone, I can get a lot of brothers to make six figures and go out and get a DLT, get an MC number, young brothers,
yeah,
and get them into six figures so they can start saving money for the next generation and start, you know, securing that.
1 million black men, this virtual event, and you got to register to be a part of this. So talk about that.
Yeah, so you can look, the site is onemillionblackmen.com, 1millionblackmen.com. There's also, you can find it on Facebook, 1 million black men to register as well. Yeah, and we're gonna be bringing it, man, across the board. There'll be different levels, obviously free. Some of it will be paid and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We're also going to be offering, you know, one thing I helped on the committee of, it was called Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses.
Okay.
When it started. And so we're kind of bringing some of that knowledge to the space. Obviously, Goldman's not underwriting it. But we are going to have different products to assist. And again, someone asked again, like, David, why don't you get grants and sponsors for all of this? I said, no, that's the problem. I said, you know, I talked to a friend of mine who had taken people through like some business education stuff at a chamber, mm-hmm. a local chamber. Uh-huh. And they were saying how when they had it sponsored, about 30% of the people finished.
Oh, no.
Right? But when they paid for it, 95% people finished.
Wow.
Right? Because what I want to do is make sure that there should be excellence, a demand on both sides. See, that's the part of capitalism that you can't take away.
Yeah.
When you pay for something, right, all of a sudden there's a demand.
Right.
So there's demand from you on what the person is getting, right? And then I, as a practitioner or as a business person, I have to also deliver and over-deliver on the promise of what you're getting.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm all for that. What we are looking at sponsors for, we are looking at rites of passage. I have the king, the youngest king in the world, African king. He's about 31, 32.
Yeah.
King of Toro will be helping out with that. We'll be taking, you know, fathers and their sons to the Toro kingdom in Uganda to go our naming ceremony to see a real kingdom, a real king, a real young king.
Not Wakanda, right?
No, this is like, you can call it Wakanda. I mean, but it's a real king.
Okay.
And going through what, you know, rites of passage. We've talked about this over the years, but it's crucially important that men in that puberty stage and in their coming up stage have something that symbolizes that, okay, I'm now becoming a man, right? And so we're working on that as well. But I mean, this at the end of the day, this is what I'll tell you, BJ. We're going to create this movement.
Yes.
You know, people will see, and people, once, you know, it's big and successful, whatever, they'll talk about it. What I have understood that there's a lot of good stuff out there. Let me say this. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Right.
But there is no place that is going to blacksplain and give us the black characteristics of wealth creation like 1 million black men will. They can't do it because, one, they don't have the experience.
Right.
Right. Number two, they don't what I've been gifted with and what I'm grateful for, if I do a humble brag, is that understanding how all these things connect, how all these things work. Right. It's something I've been gifted and graced at by God. And so, you know, me and the other speakers and folks on there, is we're going to really take the concepts and principles, and it's going to be no fluff. It's going to be straight, like, hey, In these situations, these are things you need to do as a Black man. These are circumstances or nuances, right? And I wanted to get to the point where we get to the brothers in Dubai, you know, the brothers in China, the brothers in Australia, right? They give the Australian perspective.
Wow.
The brothers in London give the London perspective.
Come on.
The brothers in Chicago. And like even in the U.S., you ready for this? Even in the U.S., there's different nuances. So when you're in California and the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
It's a very much an IP world where an idea can become a movie, right? So people are very conscious of their ideas.
Yes.
Okay. When you get to the East Coast, education and how smart you are become a big value, right? When you're in the Midwest, we make stuff. We care about, does it work?
Yeah.
Right. But what's the application of it?
Yeah.
Your ideas is great. It's fantastic. Keep that in California. But you come to the Midwest, this is show me state. Okay. I mean, this is show me country.
Right.
Okay. Like,
right.
So even understanding that, and then how do you operate like that as a Black man? What I got tired of seeing in the wealth stuff and the, all that stuff, money stuff. It's like we're giving a canvas.
Yeah.
But it doesn't give us context.
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Like we gotta have context, BJ. Like the context is more important. Like, here's an example. As a leadership, as a man, you ready for this?
Yeah.
When I'm dealing with, look, I am 6'1", I'm pretty muscular, right? When I'm dealing with a lot of staff, I actually purposely set things up with my management teams because I have to protect myself.
Mm-hmm.
From nuances, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because of my size and my stature, although somebody else may be able to really be harsh with somebody,
yeah,
right? I have to be conscious of that because
right.
that could be for me, it could be a lawsuit.
That's right.
And I even do anything.
That's right. He threatened
me. It's just
me.
That because right, right, because of my stature, because mm-hmm. of my, and so it's all of these different nuances. Again, you know this, BJ. You've learned this over time. So what if we could take BJ and your knowledge and your understanding and give it to a 27, a 30-year-old, but package it in media? You've been in media, right?
Yeah, right.
There's a lot of things in media and radio and all this communication stuff that you understand.
Right.
That the nuances, how you stayed alive, how you made it in the space,
yeah.
right? That is what has to be passed. And that is what, again, the Jewish brothers have been very good at. The Chinese brothers have been very good at, right? Even those from the Dutch and the European sects have been very good at. And now it's time for us to start to do that.
Man, I appreciate that whole spiel, man. I mean, this is, you gave me chills on my spine when you talk about brothers from China. And people don't even think about brothers from China, right?
Oh, they in there. Oh, they
brothers
there.
From China, Australia, all these different coming together. Because unity, the power of our unity financially is the ticket to freedom. When you talk about the average Black man, what you said about your goal is to take the average Black man and make him a global millionaire. And we can't even fathom that thought right now, walking around with $20 in your pocket, waiting for the next paycheck. The education piece of the 1 million Black men is going to be just fascinating. Do you have any plans to go down into the grade schools, like with the young boys?
So it's funny, the pledge of success, we're actually testing it now. So the goal is that we're going to build out the institutional side of the 1 million Black men, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to build it with our own money. Black men are going to pay for some of the content and some of the resources. That's what's going to happen.
That's right.
But because of those resources, right, it was going to help us do all the things for kids that we need to do, right? See, the thing is that, and again, that's why I say we have to stop looking outside of us.
Man, come on, man.
Right?
Right.
Like when we do things like it's
we're still like children. We're like children still begging somebody to do things for us.
Like, forget this, man. I'm so tired. And look, I don't want to get too deep into politics. But look, I'm all for, I think there should be reparations for what has been done. I do think that. But reparations is not going to save our nation. Reparations is not going to save our people. It's going to be a payment. That'll be great. Or education or a house or whatever the case is. That's fine. Right. But what's going to help our people thrive long term is going to be two things. Ownership of ourselves mm-hmm. and also understanding their Black identity. OK,
there you go.
Understanding who Mansa Musa is. Understanding what the Sudanese empire was. understand our identity and who we are, understanding that most of globally, right, we had already explored all of these lands.
That's
when they
right,
came
right.
to America, when they came to Australia, when they went to the Polynesians, there were already brown and black people there.
Right.
Okay. But understanding that, so that we understand the last 200-300 years, that's been a, I don't want to minimize, but that's really been a blip in history for what we've been in the world.
Right.
About we that, were the holders of gold.
Yes, about that.
We were
tiny.
The holders of.
That's
go
right.
Ahead, go ahead.
That's right. Now, say it's about that tiny.
You know, right. When you look at human history.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's time for us to step back into our rightful place. I want brothers who will understand and say, hey, you know what? Look, like, yes, there may be challenges here, but there are 6 billion people plus in the world. And many of us are positioning, we are inside of nations, and we are positioned in a place where we can be a resource to those 6 billion people. I want to get us just out of the mind frame of thinking, oh, let me get a minority certification, which is fine. Let me get a woman on. Okay, so that's fine. I'm not, look, that was all. But what has happened, what I saw, this is what frustrated me with the whole minority business contracting stuff. Let me tell you what frustrated me.
Okay.
So here you have $100 million.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they say, oh, okay, 10% of it has to go to minorities. Okay, great.
Right.
So now you got 10 minorities fighting over 10 million.
Right.
The other 90%, hold on, wait. They go to other people, but you got 10 people fighting over 90 million.
Right, right.
And what was so frustrating to me or asinine to me is assaulting. I'm going, so why can't I bid on the 100? Oh, well, it's capacity, experience. I said, oh, I know this game. And this is stuff we're going to talk about. I know this game.
Yeah.
So time out. Guess what? If you're saying I can't do a $100 million contract, nobody does a $100 million contract until they do a $100 million contract.
Mm.
PJ,
right.
That's like you said, hey, man, you can't talk on the radio. Well, you can't talk on the radio until you talk on the radio.
Right.
So the idea, so we've been fooled,
yes,
to believe that, oh, because you've never done that contract before, you can't do it. Well, guess what? The first person who built the skyscraper had never built a skyscraper either.
Wow, man.
The first person that ever been, come on, man. So like these are nuances and games that I'm like, come on, this is about barrier of entry, right? This is about creating barriers of entry. What are you talking about?
You know, ownership of ourselves is like, I mean, when you say that, man, you know, a lot of people don't think like brothers like yourself that are millionaires, multimillionaires, right? You don't hear them talk like this in the open space. You're going out in the open space and you're going to have a target on your back. But
that's
these
okay.
These black men, yeah, these black men are going to surround you because there hasn't been a brother like yourself. And I can't say, I know there's a lot of, like you said earlier, there's a lot of us that have done some good work and done some things, but what you're proposing to do is very, very monumental. And we got to make sure that this works. I'm with this movement 1000%, brother. I'm telling you, I'll do everything within my power so we can get all these men in these different cities to come together and learn how to create generational wealth so we'll never have to beg nobody for nothing.
Here's the power. You ready for the power? You ready for this,
come on,
bro? And when I did it, it did something in my brain. I made a bunch of money. I put a whole bunch of money away for my kids, at least for their education. My kids and probably their kids and their kids educated. I'm probably 3 generations down.
Wow, go ahead.
Their education or their first business or whatever. And something had happened to me. And I realized as a man, BJ,
mm-hmm,
part of our purpose as a man is really, we're not really here for us. We're really here for the future generations.
Yes.
Meaning that, like your measurement, it says in Proverbs, a good man is a good man leaves an inheritance for his children.
Yes.
And I had to really understand. I said, wait, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. Like, we sometimes are trying to live our best life in our life.
Yes.
In reality, you need to live the best life you can, but you got to be more concerned. No matter, I don't care what your baby mama drama is, what your ex drama, whatever it is, those children you produced on earth deserve the shot and the opportunity to go after life in the best way possible. Look, my parents came to Chicago. Luckily, I wasn't in Mississippi. Mississippi has a different opportunity set. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. For many different reasons. In their own, but we know Mississippi versus Chicago is different opportunity sets. Okay. Right. And so, like, the reality is that we got to push the next generation forward, but we're not going to do that. Right. Just thinking about ourselves, consuming ourselves and everything. I'm going to challenge every brother, every single brother, no matter what state you're in, you can get your kids a bank account. You can put cash in it. You can start to teach them principles, right, of ownership. Teach them principles of what it means to be a leader, okay? So they can understand that. Like that is part of your responsibility. Part of your responsibility as a man here on earth.
Yes.
Is legacy. What is that legacy driven by? Yes, it's the principles. It's the values. It's what religion is, all of that. But if you don't teach your children the economic system in which they're operating in, you're setting them up for fail, because this is how capitalism works. Capitalism works like this. Either you are a participator or you are a victim.
Wow.
That is how it works. Bottom line. Okay. I mean, you can call it like it is.
That's right.
You are participating or you are being victimized. Why is that there? Because if you're not creating, if we're not creating the products, if we're not creating the systems, the services, if we're not doing the exports and stuff like that, that means we're consuming what other people have. We created the Black Skin Institute because I realized, hold on, as a Black person, when you got skin problems, where the heck do you go?
Right.
You're expecting, with all due respect,
yeah,
a white doctor with white institutional training, right, and a white mindset and white skin,
right,
to work on your, come on, man. Like, this is, come on. Like, we
sounds
have,
ridiculous, yeah.
We have really, like, it's time for us to love ourselves, to empower ourselves and to go forward. And I think, again, I love what Jesse Jackson did. I love what Martin Luther King did. I love what all the brothers, they had to fight for different reasons. But this next fight, we're too rich. We're too global to now be dependent upon what other people's are giving us scraps from the table. We have too much, man. That's too much.
Women want to see this so bad. They want to see their man financially able to support the family. And they would cheer this initiative on like crazy because, you know, women are out here, you know, they by themselves trying to make things. I had a lady call me the other day and she was upset because she's working a minimum wage job supporting the family and the man doesn't have any money. And she says, why do I have to suffer? So I think what you're doing is so monumental in helping Black men have dignity, self-respect, and like you said, generating, you know, when a woman has a baby for you, she's generating you into the future, and we owe her and the children everything, and we need money. I mean, that's the bottom line. We just need money. And we need somebody to teach us. And I really appreciate your passion and what you're saying, man. You know, you're a very valuable brother, man. And we got to protect you and we got to help you get this message out, no matter how long it takes. You know what I'm saying? And one of the things, I'm going to close with this too. You know, this right here, we may not even see the end result of it, but at least it started, you know?
That's right. Hold on, wait.
Okay.
Most men, you don't necessarily see the fruit of your labor. It takes a couple generations.
Right.
It's the reality.
Yeah.
Dr. King died. And then what is it? Almost 50 years later, Obama emerges.
Wow.
So the reality is, I understand I'm not teaching to David now or to BJ now. We're preparing because there's a two-year-old that's a toddler sitting somewhere that we may not never see it. We might never understand it, but they're going to be the recipient if we really collectively start to come together, get educated, but also start to take actions. I truly believe this with all my heart. I truly believe with all my heart, with all due respect to everything that's happened.
Yeah.
Okay. This next dispensation, I use that word, this next movement, is going to be our real movement into freedom. Like Dr. King, after he passed the civil rights movement, He went into the poor people's campaign. He said, man, why am I, I'm freeing my people to sit at a lunch counter and they can't afford the burger.
Right.
If we don't get this economic thing down, and again, we just need to move that needle, BJ.
Right.
Move the needle. We ain't going to reach everybody. But if we move that needle, even 10%,
mm-hmm.
20% in our lifetime, that's enough to keep on moving. Look, China, dude, they have become an economic superpower. It did not happen because they were thinking about the next 5 years. It happened because they were thinking 30 years,
right?
40 years.
Yes.
You plan out strategically, and hopefully I will be a vessel or be used for this. I know it's not about me, but I will be a vessel used for, because if we're not getting our brothers the right information and giving them a resource where they can really plug into and they can see themselves as themselves from a global perspective.
Yes, yes.
Again, a global perspective. Then, man, we can become, you know, I know there will be pushback, but, you know, I don't care.
That's
because
right.
I, at this point in my life, I go, would you start to understand at the end of the day, you have a family, you have your culture, you have your people, and it's important that we get reconnected to that in this next generation.
Man, beautiful, man. Man, I enjoyed this time, man, with you and getting into your mind and what you want to do with 1 million black men. And tell everybody again how they can get involved, brother.
Yeah, so again, go to 1 million black men, the number 1, millionblackman.com. You can register there. You know, go online, this all the social media handle stuff. But the biggest thing, look, man, I want you, and if you're listening to this, you know, if you have a son, if you have a nephew, you know, for the women, again, this is built for men, but for the women, if you have men in your life and you're like, man, this is something they should listen to and hear, please, by all means, like, have them show up. That's, again, we have a kind of a free version to it as well. That's why we did that. But look, I'm super excited about this, man. This is the beginning, and I'm in 3-4 years, I hope to look back and go, all right, we did that. We actually made a mark and moved it. And then hopefully institutionally, we can keep it going on. The one thing I was thinking about, I'll digress about this. You know, I've watched over time, you know, in America, I'll just speak about America. There's been these movements of people who have really helped white America get freer psychologically, mm-hmm. right? You had Napoleon Hill, you had obviously, you know, Billy Graham and some things. You had, like, different voices came about to help white America, you know, see themselves economically, all kind of stuff, right? And I hope to be one of the voices that helps us see ourselves economically now that we have a chance to participate. Right. Yeah. Before, we had a big excuse. We literally couldn't participate at all.
Right. Right.
Right. And there's still redlining effects. There's still effects. But now I think that the time is now where we can participate. Technology allows it.
Mm-hmm.
The globalization allows it. It's time for us to take our rightful place, man, and start to sit at the table.
Well, I'm gonna be right beside you, brother. Walking with you. And right. We're going to do this thing, man. To learn about how to create this generational wealth and go on to the next level. This is what God wants. This is what God wants. He wants this. That was financial global strategist David Anderson. He says this upcoming virtual event is the meeting they don't want us to have. It's happening April 29th and 30th. You can go register at 1millionblackmen.com. That's 1millionblackmen.com. We'll see you April 29th and 30th.